You're listening to The Capital Table. Private capital markets have been evolving for many years, but never more so than in recent times. Take a seat at the Capital Table with leading experts discussing insights into the private equity and M&A worlds, and take away the knowledge you need to excel in a rapidly changing marketplace. We know this is one table you'll leave feeling full and satisfied.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Capital Table. I'm Steve Brady, market leader for transaction advisory at Withum. Excited for our topic today on key areas of due diligence for technology companies. And pleased to have joining us John Shrump, one of our outstanding transaction advisory team members at Withum, who does a lot of work in this space and shower us with a lot of interesting activities to look at within technology companies. Welcome, John.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, and thanks for the glowing introduction there. Just to add on to that background, I'm a manager at Withum's transaction advisory practice, focusing on both buy and sell side due diligence. Previously worked as an auditor for quite a few years across various industries. But now, as Steve mentioned, focusing quite a bit in our technology sector.
Yeah, and certainly, John, you know, we've seen the M&A market for technology deals, you know, ebb and flow over the last few years. And certainly without going too deep on the last year, you know, certainly the venture side having dried up for quite a while, leading to, you know, some interesting opportunities, but we've certainly seen the sector start to heat up again recently, including some, I'll call them, good old fashioned, you know, buyout type deals. So, you know, what are your thoughts on the market?
Yeah, to that point, you know, 2021, early 22 was hot, not just in technology sector, but across the board. So technology was certainly not unique in that regard. I think the main takeaway for me is that slowdown kind of opens up two areas of potential opportunity there. Number one is a lot of companies that were expecting to do deals in late 22 or first half of this year, those didn't get done. So those companies are either looking for money, or you might be a private equity firm or strategic company with money to spend now, and you're out looking for a target. The other opportunity there is the pace is much slower than we were 2 years ago, and that really opens the door for increased due diligence and increased scrutiny on targets.
Yeah, that's a great point. So let's dive into that a little bit more. I mean, from your view, what's the most important financial diligence concern for technology companies?
Yeah, I think number one, and this is, you know, one of our first priorities when we're going into a due diligence engagement, it's taking a look at revenue recognition. It's an extremely complex issue. I know it was it's a few years ago now that the new standard ASC 606 was introduced, but that was quite a dramatic change for a lot of companies, and not every company adopted it, especially, you know, when we're talking specifically about the technology sector. These are a lot of startup and growing companies. And the main concern there is, you know, you just want cash flow. You want to keep the lights on. You want to keep your employees paid. You're not really thinking about nailing down your revenue recognition standards. So the big deviation we see is the default mode is when you bill a customer, you record your revenue right at that bill date. Now, the example would be if you're a SaaS company and you're offering annual subscriptions, you know, that, you know, you got a 12-month subscription, you send a bill at the front end of that contract, you're recording your cash, you're recording your AR, and you're taking that revenue right then. Under GAAP, that revenue really should be spread out over the length of the contract. So you take it ratably every month, which is obviously quite a departure from taking it all at once.
Yeah, absolutely. And great points there. What are some of the other concerns around revenue recognition that investors, companies doing an acquisition should be aware of?
Yeah, like I said, that's usually one of our main areas of diligence and a key area of concern. I think we could likely do an entire episode on revenue recognition alone, and that may be a future episode. But for now, I'd say anyone interested in more information or wants to get more into the weeds of that, they can take a listen to a fellow Withum podcast, Take Me to the Cloud. They did a great recent episode specifically on ASC 606 revenue recognition with a focus on SaaS companies and startups. So a great listen, I'd highly recommend.
Yeah, it's a great pointer, and you're right. There's a lot of issues with diligence for technology companies. So, yeah, let's move on from revenue recognition, and you know, what are kind of the next big items that you look at?
Yeah, you know, I'll take a half step move on here and kind of cheating because I'm going to talk about deferred revenue next. Obviously, these go hand in hand, and I'm going to piggyback off that last example I gave. When we're talking about, you know, you have an annual subscription and you bill in advance, and I just told everyone that they can't take that revenue all at once under GAAP, you know, the first question is, well, what do I do with that? What do I record on my balance sheet? What do I record in my income statement? That's where deferred revenue comes in. So anything you're billing in advance there and any cash you're collecting on a long-term subscription, that really should go down as a liability on your balance sheet. And this is a kind of a unique concept and, you know, not always intuitive. And the, you know, main wrinkle we run into is a lot of basic or base level accounting ERP systems really aren't built to track deferred revenue. So what happens is you're either A, not reporting deferred revenue, or B, you're reporting it, but you're using a manual process. You're just typing in numbers in an Excel sheet, which as I think we've all seen, manual process just really opens the door for user errors, manual errors, basic human error. So that just is another area that opens up a spotlight for increased scrutiny that you really want to have buttoned up.
Yeah, and certainly that whole internal processes, we'll probably come back to that in a second, but, you know, kind of keeping on finishing out the thoughts on ASC 606, is there any impact on the expense side?
Yeah, and that's a great question there. You know, one of the core principles of GAAP is this, it's the matching principle, right? You want to match your expenses to your revenue recognition. And that's kind of the concept behind the phrase they use are incremental costs incurred in obtaining a customer contract. Now, breaking down that long-winded phrase there, the example I'll use are sales commissions. So when you're going after a new customer or a new contract, you're likely paying a salesperson or someone within your organization a sales commission tied to that contract, you know, a percentage fee or a cut. The simple way or the simple approach that most companies use is salesperson earned it, I paid it, so I took the expense. Now, to adhere to that matching principle, the technically correct way to do it under GAAP is you actually capitalize the total amount of that commission and you put it as an asset on your balance sheet, and then you ratably depreciate that over the life of the contract. So in that SaaS model I talked about, you would ratably expense that commission expense over the life of the contract. So pretty complicated stuff. Not a lot of companies are doing that. And that is frequently a point of discovery that happens during diligence. And before we move on from that last point, there's one minor wrinkle I'd feel bad not mentioning here. And there is a practical expedient allowed under GAAP to to help cost companies deal with these types of expenses and complexities. And that's if the contract is 12 months in length or less, you are allowed to expense that on the date it initially is incurred. So the takeaway I would say there is that that reporting policy may actually inform the way that contracts are written or that commission policies are written, so that you don't have to deal with putting up that balance sheet, capitalized expense, and taking it ratably. So you can take the practical expedient, and as long as that's in line with your contract, there's nothing to worry about.
That's a good, helpful hint for our audience. And obviously, if simplicity can be achieved, that's always a good thing, especially for fast-growing technology companies. Maybe just kind of bringing closure to the accounting policy side of things. You know, what are some of the other key accounting policies they need to consider?
Yeah, and I'll stick with capitalized expenses here. And the big one we see in the technology sector specifically are capitalized software expenses. Now, just like revenue recognition, this could easily be an entire podcast or multiple podcasts, really. But there's an interesting wrinkle and gap that allows companies to capitalize. And again, that's putting it on your balance sheet, and then you depreciate or amortize that expense over a period of time. You're able to capitalize software development costs. Now, there's very, 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 very specific rules in play here with a lot of minutiae there. But this covers both software developed for internal use. You know, that's your back office, that's your productivity software, as well as software developed for customer use. And this is, you know, the software that you're actually selling. And there's very limited periods in the development phase that you're allowed to capitalize, and there's very limited types of expenses there. I don't think anybody has the time to go through that entire standard here today. The takeaway here I would give is it's highly recommended that even if you do the calculation internally, you have a third party accountant or a CPA come and review that or help you with the calculation, because it can get very complex and can be a key area of due diligence.
Yeah, that's great, and certainly an important round out to the accounting policies. So, John, a lot of technology emerging growth companies don't have robust internal accounting teams. You know, many of them rely on third-party accountants, and you know, there's a lot to consider in this, in closing the books and thinking of the due diligence phase. And oftentimes they're just using their tax preparer, and you know, so we've seen it all when it comes to diligence on technology companies. I mean, what are your thoughts in terms of these companies getting prepared for the diligence process?
Yeah, and that's a fantastic point, Steve. You know, always, we always recommend, having a third party accountant or, you know, having a strong financial reporting function. The issue that is very specific to due diligence here is a lot of times if you're relying on a third party accountant, you're only bringing them in at year end or quarter end, and they're only seeing a very small period of time, and they're looking at a very specific closing date. So there may be adjustments or entries or, you know, significant policies implemented that are only being done in December at year end when you're bringing that third party accountant in. When you compare that to an M&A transaction, we're recording this right now in August, you know, a lot of times the deal is going to close mid-year. It's not always clean cut end of year. And if there are significant entries being done by that third party and they're only being done in December, you're going to want to understand what those are, and you're going to want to apply those through whatever your mid-year period is. And that can really result in some significant diligence adjustments, both positive and negative.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've talked a lot about financial reporting, you know, just kind of high level from a tax perspective. You know, what should companies be considering as they enter into a transaction?
Yeah, and I won't even for a second here pretend to be the tax expert, but I will say from my perspective, what we see a lot of in tech deals specifically, it's a lack of understanding around sales taxes and nexus. I believe it was 2018 was the landmark Wayfair case that really opened the door for companies that may not have a physical nexus or physical location in a state. They may still be subject to sales tax based on remote employees or selling remotely to customers there. So definitely a big issue here, and definitely something companies will want to understand going into diligence if there's any kind of sales tax liability or exposure there. And you certainly want to get on top of that as early as possible to start the mitigation process and avoid any pesky penalties and interest on that, on any exposure there.
Yeah, and any potential issues in trying to get a deal closed. So, I mean, to our listeners, it's a great point, John, that, you know, especially those without the internal resources to be on top of issues like this, get the advisors you need, because it can really derail a deal. You know, with that, any other, you know, general recommendations for technology companies preparing for an M&A transaction?
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered a wide range of topics today, and I hope I didn't scare anyone away with the with the depth of those. But it, you know, overall point is it's important to invest in time and effort into your financial reporting function, whether that's an internal team or utilizing a third party to help. It can really contribute to the business and help you understand metrics in a deeper way and have a lot more reliability. And it just inspires confidence in a potential buyer if you're going to market.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've focused this issue, John, on the accounting tax issues and diligence for a technology company. There's certainly other, I'll call it more business issues to consider. You know, we'll bring this to a close and hopefully discuss those business issues on a future episode. But, you know, for those out there, again, a lot of great advice from someone like John who understands this stuff incredibly well. And certainly to put it in perspective, you know, if you're thinking of a transaction and you're on that side of it, whoever the buyer is going to view it from this direction because they have to. So, you know, any closing thoughts, John? But I think it's been a great discussion on these issues.
Yeah, Steve, agreed. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed our discussion here. And I'll just close it that, you know, myself, and I think I speak for Steve here, that Withum is happy to help in any capacity addressing any of the concerns we discussed today.
Great. Thanks, John. Again, hopefully we'll talk about those business issues on a future episode of The Capital Table. Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to The Capital Table. For more information, please visit Withum.com. Thank you for listening.